Indie Can Music presents the Toronto Indie Scene, bringing you an hour of Canada's best emerging artists and a look behind the scenes with industry insiders and artists. Emerging from the new wave scene of the late 70s and early 80s, Kevin Staples and Carol Pope created what would be Rough Trade. After three Junos and platinum record sales, the Canadian music landscape was altered permanently. Carol Pope is back to being an indie artist, and she's here today to talk about her CD Transcend and her life in the music scene. But first, halfway through their North American Shut Up and Drive tour, welcome Vancouver's The Flares.
Hi, we are The Flares, and this is a song called Poison Love.
You guys sound great. You're obviously, well-seasoned, have been on the road. How's the road treating you?
Awesome.
Lots of baked potatoes.
We live off Wendy's.
The baked potato and cigarette tour.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite places so far? Favorite audiences?
Cornwall.
Cornwall was the best. Toronto was good at the Bovine, and they've all been very different, but all good in their own sense.
Yeah. Lethbridge was cool. Lethbridge, Alberta was a
Little punk rock crowd.
Punk rock.
Oh yeah,
crowd.
That was really fun.
Great.
Like, every show has been completely different. Just like all the crowds have been different demographics, different ages, and generally we've always gotten a good response, so that's good to know that we have that little bit of diversity.
Yeah, now you're very loyal to your audience. I know on your MySpace you're constantly blogging as you move along, as soon as you can get to a computer, just sort of filling in the fans with stop by stop. Who does that?
Jen's kind of done it.
I think I've written one blog that was about 11 billion pages long so far that detailed every move I've ever made since we left tour. I'm very lonely.
Which is good. So we're going to try and, like, upkeep that when we can and, like, fill in the dates so we can have every day covered of little funny things that happen and neat people that we meet.
Because funny things happen every day.
And we do meet neat people.
Yes.
And we use like that loosely. Nice.
Okay, now I see where this is going. Okay, let's get back to the music.
This next one is called Stinger.
Okay, how did each of you get into the music and find each other? How did the Flares come to be?
Lava Life.
Yes. Basically, Jen, Dawn, and I met up touring about 3 years ago, I think now. Three or four?
4 years
ago. Four. Oh my God, we're old! And we were touring in different bands, and we were playing similar shows, and we just kind of came together and said, hey, if we're ever in the same city at the same time, we should hook up and jam, and eventually it happened.
It was just meant to be. We saw each other, sparks flew, and we knew we couldn't be apart, so we've been together ever since.
We haven't explained Ryan yet.
Yeah, well, Jill and I have always wanted to play together throughout the years, and then...
Play music together.
Music, yeah, sorry. Play with each other. Yeah, we were looking to be in the same band together, and then this kind of came up, and so I just jumped on bass, and there she was.
The Flares was
born. The Flares were born.
So who had the Biff Naked connection? Was that you, Jen?
My name's Jill, and yes.
Jill, sorry.
Yes, I used to play guitar in her band for a couple years. And that's how actually we met, was on those tours. I was touring with Biff Naked, and they were touring with their band Thule, and we corrupted each band and started the Flares.
So tell us what's next. Where are you off to after Toronto?
We have about another week of Southern Ontario shows, and then we are off to the USA. We're very excited about it. We've done, like, American shows here and there, but this is our first full-on U.S. tour, 6 weeks out there, so we're looking forward to some fun in the sun.
Yes. How many stops in 6 weeks?
1,000.
30-something. 36, 40,
isn't it?
I think 35.
Somewhere between 35 and 40.
Wow, that's busy. Ryan, you were telling me how many kilometers you've put on the van since the band got together. How many is it?
Just shy of 200,000. That's in the last 3 years.
That's a traveling band.
Yeah, we tour quite a bit. That's what we love to
do
the most.
We're all crammed in the red van. It's good.
Now, let's just finish with a little word on the new CD. Where did you record it? Is it out there? Who distributes it? How can fans get a hold of it?
Well, actually, it was recorded over a little stretch of time, but mostly over last summer. It's in stores now, actually, in Canada and the U.S. You can pretty much get it at any record store or online, like iTunes or Amazon.com, whatever. You can get it everywhere.
And at our
show. And at our show, maybe with a kiss included as a special little bonus.
Little miles are free if you buy
it. At the shows.
So come out and see them, folks. Okay, well, thanks for coming in to IndieCan. It was great to have you. I know how busy you are. I'm glad you made time for us. Let's finish with your next single, shall we?
Yes.
Sounds great.
This one is called Sorry for Loving You.
Trust you, but out of nowhere it's too late. I accept the fate that you used to be. You made me break in an unfamiliar way, but you won't get what you want from me, and now you'll have to pay. I'm sorry for loving you, baby, and I'm sorry for making you crazy.
Sorry for making you crazy. Hi, this is Mo Berg, and you're listening to IndieCan Radio.
Thanks to the Flares for coming and seeing us. This session was previously recorded just before they had to head off to the Horseshoe Tavern for soundcheck. Consequently, it was a whirlwind interview, and we didn't have time for some of the cliché questions like, what's it like being a woman in the rock and roll game, or after months on the road, are y'all on the same cycle? Probably better. So after the interview, we packed up here at IndieCan from Redline Recorders, jumped in a cab, and headed down to the shoe. It was a fabulous set, and this is a band you really got to see live. Anyway, let's get back to the music. I'm going to take you on a little North by Northeast nostalgia trip today, and I'm going to kick off with how I started North by Northeast at the Silver Dollar with a band I would get to know a little bit after the show. The band is called The Ride Theory from Hamilton. They're opening for the Yardbirds on their Farewell to Farewell tours, and listening to this song, you can imagine how these Hamilton mop tops are well suited for a Yardbirds gig. Here's Ride Theory.
For just one reason, one time, just once. Good girl, kiss me. It's no big deal, it's just one dead body. Good girl, kiss me. It's no big deal, it's just one dead body. Good girl, kiss me. Did you think that this was something we wanted? Good girl, kiss me. Did you think that this was something we wanted? It's no big deal, it's just one dead body. It's no big deal, we're just fighting for nothing. It's no big deal, you just can't see nothing.
I will make you understand.
We just heard Abandoned Souls, another The Downsview Park Canada Day bands at the free concert. What a lineup that is. Before that was Lie. I saw Lie at the Bovine Sex Club on the Friday night of North by Northeast at 3 a.m. This is an act everyone has to see at least once. It's theatrical. It has this kind of train wreck could happen at any minute, true blue rock and roll kind of feel to it. And you got to take them in. And before that was Ride Theory from the CD In the City. Back to North by Northeast. This band I saw first time at the Rivoli Saturday night. They're from Montreal, the West Island to be exact if you're a local. The band is called Miche, and this is from their full-length CD Touch. It's great music end-to-end, and I've dug way deep to song 8. This is a witty, if not sarcastic, tune. It's called Popstar.
Sarcastic bastards, thinking of days and fields when nobody really feels. It's all too much, fabulous. Don't let it get you down. And I know should take all these moments and bottle them up so I can remember them later. What about later? Shouldn't I bottle it too? I've got a whole shelf of time. Can't think of a single day and I'm wasting away, wasting my time, wishing the world would fuck off. At least then I could be bitter. For now I'm just fabulous. You are fabulous. We're so fucking fabulous. We don't even know it. I wish I was more afflicted. I'd take it all.
out on you, we'd be so fabulous without even trying. I know should take all these words and bottle them up so I can spew them out. Somebody's listening, but who would be listening? I have nothing to say, which is weird, 'cause I've always got something to say, and I'm wasting away, wasting my time, wishing the world would fuck off. At least then I could be better thinking of rainy days. So just stay away, I'll be fabulous before you know it. I'll wait for the day I get home, somebody at the door who thinks I am fabulous without even trying.
So that was Dan Mangan from Postcards and Daydreams, and the song was Fabulous. Just bumped into Dan in the lobby of the Holiday Inn at North by Northeast, and he handed me a CD, and I just loved it. I wanted to share it with you. Before that was Mish. So, this is episode 10. It seems like a big deal, certainly to Andre and I, and thanks again to Redline Recorders for hosting us. And now let's get on with our industry insider interview.
This is Sean from Crash Kelly, and you're listening to the Toronto Indie Scene.
We have the great pleasure to have with us in our studio, Carol Pope. Carol, welcome to IndieCan Studio.
Thank you.
I had a chance to see you in Cambridge. Great show. Still got it. Always had it. Always will. Tell me, do you still get nervous before a show, or does it feel like another day at the office, or do you wonder, what the hell am I doing here? What's it like for you?
I don't really get nervous. I just really like performing. I don't like anything else about the business, but I like the actual performing.
Actual performing
in
front of an audience.
It's all crap except for that.
And tell us a little bit about your most recent album. It's an indie album. You put out yourself, Transcend.
Oh, it took me forever to get it made because, you know, I had like 2 cents. most of it is live in the studio. There's a couple of electronica things with my guitar player, Tim Welsh, who we've worked together since like 86 or 87, so it's all him. And also there's one track that, a song called World of One that Alan Johannes did in L.A., and that's all him. And he works with Queens of the Stone Age and P.J. Harvey and co-produced the Chris Cornell album and has an amazing band called 11. So it took me like 3 or 4 years to get it together, but I'm pretty happy with it, considering.
Considering.
It cost 5 cents.
So you produced it yourself?
Yeah, I produced it.
Have you ever produced for anybody else?
A couple of things for movies. I'd like to produce for other people. I'd like to. I'm very jealous of Linda Perry, and I wish I was her. You know, I wish I was like writing and producing for Pink and Lisa Marie Presley and things like that.
But you would be receptive to something like that?
Oh, totally.
With the right artist.
Oh yeah. I mean, if anybody, yeah, anybody out there. Because I think I have a pretty good ear, and I definitely, you know, because I've been around forever, have a knowledge of music and material, and so.
Well, I know how you get when people want to dwell on some sort of 80s nostalgia thing, I won't spend too much time on that, but, I mean, you are a 3-time Juno winner. Mm-hmm. You did reshape the musical landscape in Canada, and you know, you have to live with that legacy to a certain degree. But how do you feel the music business has changed, or has it changed at all since the early days?
I think it's changed for the worse. I think people don't believe in developing artists like they used to. you know, if you don't sell records, you get dumped. And back in the day, labels were more interested in developing artists over a few albums. I think they're sold children. You know, it's just all young kids, and they really have no knowledge. It's like young kids and business people are running the industry and corporations, I mean, and that's just horrifying. But who needs them? Because we have the internet.
So you feel like the music industry is run by a bunch of bean counters and empire builders.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, all the labels are getting bought out. I mean, how many labels are left, really? How many big labels are left? Three or four, maybe?
Four now.
Yeah, yeah. That's frightening.
Now, speaking of labels, tell us about the early days of True North. I mean, we like to think of it as a great, pure Canadian story. Is there a dark side to it? What was your experience with True North?
The dark side to True North. I don't know. I mean, I really that was Bernie Finkelstein and Bernie Fiedler at that time. They had this great label, more of a folk label. And I think Bernie Finkelstein came to see us, and I said, "Why don't you sign us?" And he said, "I will." And we'd also had interest from Supertramp, had a label too in the States, but I don't know. But
they were on A&M, weren't they?
Well, they had some other new label that somehow was interested in us. But we went with Bernie and True North, and you know, I'm not sorry. I mean, the only thing I didn't like was we always had to work in the same studio, and I wanted to try other studios and different engineers.
Now, tell me about songwriting now. We talked earlier, you're talking about being interested in a new recording project. Is this because of a burning hole in your heart, a hole in the pocketbook, or what motivates you to keep writing music?
Well, it's not money. I don't know. I just feel really inspired at the moment. And, yeah, I love writing music. I mean, you know, that's what I do. I'm an artist. I write and perform. And I'm very into GarageBand now because I am, like, really old school. And I used to write on a Tascam 4-track and play guitar and use an Alesis drum machine. And now there's GarageBand. So there's all these loops that I can play with, which I really like. I'm writing stuff that I wouldn't normally be writing and putting all these parts on that I wouldn't normally be doing. So I can, like, kind of create more of a picture of, you know, what I want my music to sound like.
What can we expect from the new album in terms of subject matter?
Oh, honey, sex. The usual sex,
still not
politics.
Over that, eh?
Well, because I'm not over it. Because I mean, well, more relationships. I don't know. I haven't really written. I've just written, I guess, more stuff about relationships this time, or I seem to be writing more stuff about relationships. And I'm getting my old sense of humor back.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm going back to the 80s and 70s for that. I'm like, you know, because Rough Trade was pretty funny, pretty dark and funny.
Well, absolutely. I mean, as I recall, just talking to another artist who was the same age as me, and we both turned 20 at the same time, and they were all excited about what was going on with music, and I felt this great heaviness that it was over, and there wasn't much going on, but there were a few bright lights. On this side of the border, Pursuit of Happiness, Rough Trade, you know, very witty and had something to say. Mm-hmm. Talking Heads, Nina Hagen was kind of interesting. I mean, there were a few bright lights, but for the most part, you know, I was still spinning my old LPs and bemoaning the death of, you know, music in this new black and white world. But, I mean, I'm younger now than I was then in that regard, because there's a lot going on.
There is. There's a lot of great bands out there. I mean, my favorite radio station is Indy 103 in Los Angeles, and Steve Jones has a show, and he's, like, such an idiot, but he has great stories. Oh, he's a chauvinist and an idiot, but he farts on air and answers his cell phone. But he has all these amazing people on, and they jam, and it's, you know, I've never heard radio like that.
Yeah, it's fresh and new.
Yeah, and they play, I like everything they play, you know, and they support local artists, so.
So what bands are you listening to now? What would you go out of your way to see?
God, hardly anything. I mean, there's a lot of one-hit wonders, but I just saw Metric in L.A., and I'll always go and see John Bryan. I'm not sure if you know who he is, but he produced Fiona Apple and Rufus Wainwright and actually Kanye West, some of the Kanye West album. And he scores things like Magnolia. Oh, he also produced Amy Mann. And he does like this one-man show where he's got a whole band set up and drums, bass, guitar, piano, and he'll like start playing everything and it's all sampled. It's all wired up so it's all sampled and then he'll play on top of that and it's like brilliant. I mean, I just think he's brilliant. And I guess the other band I saw, God, I don't see bands that much. Oh, Sigur Rós. I saw them at the Hollywood Bowl because that's a fantastic venue to go and see people at because you can like bring a picnic and bring
it,
wine.
It's still there, is it?
Yeah, and they have amazing shows.
Yeah, it's amazing. Some artists can do so much with so little. I saw Joe Jackson with only two other musicians and at Kingswood, and he just totally commanded the audience. Mm-hmm. And he was doing stuff off his Jump and Jive. And, you know, how do you do that with three people? And
well, if a song is good, you should be able to play it on guitar or piano. I mean, it's all about the song, really.
Well, I think so. A friend of yours, John Capak, is trying to drive that home to Toronto songwriters because there's a lot of great music out there, but there seems to be a premium on, you know, the craft of songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're certainly looking forward to what you can come up with next. So it's been a great career for you. Let's just go back one more time, if you don't mind. What did it feel like to hear your song on the radio for the first time?
Oh, well, it was incredibly exciting. And we were very surprised by the amount of success we did have. You know, because we weren't sure they'd play. We just wanted to make a record and we wanted to perform and everything else was gravy, you know. So, yeah, it was a great, great feeling to hear.
Yeah, so the fact that radio stations were playing your music or royalties were coming in, that was just an afterthought. It was still all about performing.
Yeah.
Well, you spent a lot of time in New York performing for free.
I mean, just pretty much, yeah.
Get out there.
Yeah.
And you won 3 Junos. Mm-hmm. Was that a surprise to you?
Totally. Yeah, I wasn't expecting to.
Sorry, Ann Murray. Sorry, Luba.
Yeah, there was some stiff competition back then. No, I mean, I think we were the only game in town because we all, you know, we just did original material and we played so much before we recorded the album. And, it just went platinum, it seems like, in a minute because there was a ready-made audience for it.
Now, later on, you came back to host the You Knows. I guess by then they were the Casbys with Paul Schaefer.
Right.
That must have been fun.
Oh, that was fun. Because we got to, you know, just write anything we wanted to and just be complete idiots and get paid for it. Yeah, we did that a couple of times, and it was wacky. The CBC is just wacky. They always got to have the dry ice and the dancers, and I'm like, what the hell? You know, it's just so old school. I mean, I don't even know. Are they still like that? I don't know. I'm sure there's still dry ice and dancers.
Well, CTV has the Junos now, and
I know they have everything, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But I'm never. They never asked me to be on the Junos, and I'm very offended by that. By the way,
I'll get the word out.
Shouldn't I be on playing a little song or something? Hello.
Now, so just looking back, I mean, I'm not treating your career as over by any means. It's, you know, in progress, but.
Yeah.
What would you say you're most proud of to date, and what would you say your greatest regret is?
Proud. I'm proud. I don't know if I'm proud. Well, I don't know what I would define. I wouldn't necessarily use the word proud, but how about like the highlights of our career?
Yeah, yeah, something.
Like, I think working, you know, touring with Bowie, and I think our first tour across Canada after we signed with True North and the record started selling, that was pretty much a highlight. And what I think we both regret is not getting support from CBS, well, now it's Sony, not getting tour support to go on with Bowie and not getting...
Now, you could have done all of North America with Bowie.
Well, we could have done, like, California and Australia and New Zealand, I think that was the offer. Yeah. And just getting, like, having bad luck with the labels in the U.S. We were on two labels that stiffed, and then we were on Boardwalk, and they both went tits up, so that was annoying. And also, I wanted to move to the States, and Kevin didn't, because I really think we should have done that.
Right. And you have now.
Yeah, I moved there like 89. I moved to Los Angeles in 1989.
And you work a little bit with TV and film, certainly Cruising, I think it was called, the Al Pacino movie.
Oh, God, we did that before we had our deal. That was like 79. Yeah.
But you're doing stuff now, are you? Is being in California make that easier?
Yes and no. I mean, there's more music supervisor, like, there's more heavy duty music supervisors there, and they, you know, do a lot of big shows there. But yeah, I have three songs on the L Word and a couple of songs on Queer as Folk, but that was just True Connections here because that was made here. And, you know, some other stuff. But it's kind of, you know, I just try and network with music supervisors there. And, you know, I'd love to get something on network TV. I know a lot of people in bands who've gotten stuff on network shows. And, you know, it's just money forever. Especially if it goes to DVD.
Yeah, it's great royalties.
Yeah, and we actually have a song that we co-wrote with Nona Hendrix, Transformation, and we make so much money from that. It was in the original show, Miami Vice, and now it's going to DVD, so they have to pay us for that. And then they redid it again for the L Word, so, and it's on the soundtrack album. So I like all that stuff.
So what would you say to someone new getting started as an artist? What would be the important things to consider in terms of career development?
Don't waste your time pursuing a label. I think you should be your own record company and apply for Factor Grant or whatever kind of grants they still have going on here. And, you know, put it out yourself. And... you just got to really, I mean, it's just a nightmare, and you got to get out there and play, and it's much more competitive. It seems like there's more bands today. It seems like everybody and their brother is in a band. But I think my big motto is just be true to yourself and be very tenacious. But also be talented, too, okay?
Okay, well, thanks so much for coming in. Means a lot to us.
You're welcome.
For those of you out there, a great history of rock and roll is Anti-Diva by Random House. The easiest way to get it is go to carolpope.com. That's Carol with an E. And you can order it through there. I think you can get an autographed copy.
That's through me. Or you can get it, you know, at Amazon or Indigo or Random House website and get my record. Too. Let's plug my record.
Absolutely.
Which you can get at carolpope.com or CD Baby or iTunes or Hear Music. You know, it's on like 45 download sites. Napster, blah, blah, blah. You know, all those.
As a matter of fact, let's close the show with a tune off of Transcend. What do you want to play?
Dream 6.
Okay. Dream 6 it is. What do you want to say about that?
What do I want to, that's a very intense song, which people think is about sex, but it's actually about death.
Okay, here we have it, Dream 6.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Indie Scene, an Indie Can Music production.
For a list of all artists featured on today's show, please visit our website at www.indiecan.com. Thanks for listening.